Okay, we're going to be in chapter 4 of Hebrews this morning. I'll read it first. Start with verse 1. Let us therefore fear, lest a promise being left us of entering into his rest, any of you should seem to come short of it. For unto us was the gospel preached as well as unto them. But the word preached did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in them that heard it. For we which have believed do enter into his rest, as he said, as I have sworn in my wrath, if they shall enter into my rest, although the works were finished from the foundation of the world. For he spoke in a certain place of a seventh day on this wise, and God did rest the seventh day from all his works. And in this place again, if they shall enter into my rest, seeing therefore it remains that some must enter therein, they to whom it was first preached entered not in because of unbelief. Again, he limited a certain day, saying to in David, today, after so long a time, as it is said, today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts. For if Jesus had given them rest, then would he not afterward have spoken of another day? There therefore remaineth a rest to the people of God. For he that is entered into the rest, he also has ceased from his own works, as God did from his. Let us labor therefore to enter into the rest, lest any man fall after the same example of unbelief. For the word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the dividing asunder of soul and spirit, and the joints and marrow, and is a discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart. Neither is there any creature that is not manifest in his sight, but all things are naked and open unto the eyes of him with whom we have to do. Seeing then that we have a great high priest that is passed into the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast our profession. For we have not a high priest which cannot be touched with the feeling of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted, like as we are, yet without sin. Let us therefore come boldly into the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in the time of need. Now let's go back and see what it really says. See what the Spirit's saying to us. In this first verse he says, let us therefore fear. Well, that's not a good word. We know that. Okay. It speaks, let us therefore have reverence. Okay. It's a word that means reverence, not fear. We're not to fear God. We're not to fear our Father, but to reverence him and honor him, to be in awe of him. Okay. Let us therefore have reverence, lest a promise being left us of entering into his rest. Now this word rest speaks of the resting place or his abode. Now, if we're entering into his rest, tell me what we're entering into.
His presence.
Into him. So you're entering into God. Just like it says in Proverbs when Solomon wrote, when we die, we all go to
one place.
And in chapter 12 of Ecclesiastes, he says, when we die, this dust goes to the earth, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. We're all going back to the spirit realm, which God is spirit. So we're entering back to God. Any of you should seem to come or fall short. See, we don't want to miss what's going on because of the wrong things, okay? It's about entering into him. In verse 2, it goes on and says, because to us was the gospel preached. Now, can you say anything other than there's two classifications of people there? Some heard and some didn't. Okay? People think there's everybody, people are preaching today that everybody is the first fruit. Everybody is there. Well, that's not true. It's a process and we're still entering in, just like the rest of this chapter goes ahead and backs up. But anyway, it was preached to us and to them, but the word preached, okay, and that word preached right there, the word is the word logos. And the logos, that's the same as Christ, okay? being preached. And now that word preached is not correct because it's the word heard. Okay? So the Logos heard did not profit or benefit them, not being mixed or united with faith in them that heard it. See how the word heard was used at the end of that verse?
Mm-hmm.
And it should also be used up there where the word preached is. The word is wrong. I mean, it's just mistranslated. But you hear what I'm saying? They heard it. Now, everybody's got ears on the side of their head, and everybody in this room can hear what I'm saying. But can everybody hear and mix it with faith? That's the point he's bringing out. So when people hear what's being said, are they taking it and mixing it with the faith that they have to increase faith? The word that we hear from the Spirit is like fertilizer. The faith we have, and it will be increased by the fertilizer or the word that we hear. As we mix it together, it grows. That's the whole point.
It gets
more energy, and it reproduces, and it grows like everything else that's alive. It reproduces cells, doesn't it? And our faith will grow and grow and grow when we hear what we hear and realize whether it's threatening to our way of thinking or not. If it's the truth of God and we hear it and we know it is, go ahead and let it do its job. Let it mix with our faith and let it increase our faith. Okay? And then you won't have to be crying out, "Lord, increase my faith." He's trying to every day if you just listen. Right? Hear what he's got to say and let it be mixed with your faith. Verse 3 goes on and says, "Because we which, or the ones that have, or the ones that believe, do enter into rest or his abode, as he said." See, he said the ones that believe. Now everybody believes something, don't they?
Yep.
But is it all truth?
Nope.
Obviously not. See, he said the ones that believe enter into his rest or his abode. Now, God lives in the realm of the Spirit, so where are we going? To the realm of the Spirit. We're already there. We just don't totally believe we're all the way there yet sometimes. He said, "As I have said in my
passion,"
it should be desire. It's the word orge. It speaks of desire. Passion, desire, pretty close. If, not if, but it should be the word that they shall enter into my rest. He said, "As I have sworn in my desire that they shall enter into my rest or my abode, although the works were what? Or made from the foundation or the conception of the cosmos."
Is it saying they shall enter or shall not?
No, they shall.
Okay, because it says shall not.
Okay, that's that word not shouldn't be there. Let me do that third verse again. I'll just read it through. "Because the ones that believe do enter into my rest, as he said. As I have sworn in my wrath that they shall enter into my rest." The ones that believe, they shall enter in. "Although the works were finished from the foundation of the world." Okay?
I wonder why the other translations that are not and never and...
Well, because they added words that's not there. it's simple.
King James.
Yep.
It makes you feel like you still have to do something.
Yep. If that's not there, it seems like you have to earn your way back in. All you have to do is believe what God said. It's not an easy believe isn't saying, "I believe there is a God." It's believing what God said, which is much more difficult. It goes against our natural grain of thinking. Okay, in verse 4 it goes on and says, because he spoke in a certain place of the seventh day on this wise, and God did rest the seventh day from his works. That's in Genesis chapter what? No, it should be 2, I think. Let me go back and look again. Doesn't hurt to look, does it? And here's what it says in Genesis 2, 1 and 2. "And thus the heavens and the earth were finished and all the host of them. And on the seventh day, God ended his work which he had made. And he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had made. And God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it." Blah, blah, blah. Okay. It's Genesis 1, 2, Genesis 2, 1 and 2. The blah, blah, blah thing you like? Well, I didn't have to read the whole thing. I think anybody that's got half a mind there can figure out that blah, blah, blah was me. It wasn't the book. Okay, I don't think I confused anybody with the blah blahs. Hope not.
That's what they do.
Yeah.
I understand. And maybe it was maybe made sense to them. Okay, and that was verse 4. So in verse 5, we go on and do this and says, and in this again, the word places in the King James shouldn't be there. In this again, that they shall enter into my rest. He says again, they shall enter into my rest. The ones that do what?
Hear.
The ones that hear what he has to say. You'll enter rest. But you know why you'll enter into rest? Because you'll cease from your labor. Just as God did. You can't enter into the place he's at and still carry your labor. You're walking into a place. The realm of the Spirit is a realm of rest. It's not a place of labor.
If you're not in the rest, you're still trying to do it yourself.
You're not in a place of rest. It's all self-inflicted everything. Verse 6 goes on to say this. And that place of his rest, again, is his abode, which is the realm of the Spirit. But 6 says, seeing or since, therefore, it remains for some must enter into it, and they to whom it was first preached or previously preached entered not in because of what? They did not enter in because of unbelief, disbelief, being obstinate or rebellious. Okay? That's why they didn't enter in. Absolutely. They still had their carnal thinking going on, the ego of man. So it's very clear that it's not about saying, forgive me, I'm sorry, dunk me in the water. That's not how you get to God. Peter told us in 1 Peter 1:23, we're born again, not of a corruptible seed, but of an incorruptible seed, which is the Word of God. When we hear the truth, that incorruptible seed, once it starts, there's no backing out. You can't do it. Once you know the truth, there's no way of denying it again.
And it's not the actual word that you're looking on the paper.
No, it's what the Spirit brings life to inside of you.
It's the said part.
It's the said part. If it ain't said, it's not got the horsepower to it. Okay, verse 7. Again, He limited a certain day, and it should say the word limiteth is wrong. It should say he appoints, ordains, or decrees a certain day, saying in David, or to David, today. We know what that word today means, don't we?
Yeah.
And right now. To David. Now, after so long a time, as it said, now, if you will hear his voice, harden not your minds. Once you start seeing this stuff, it's everywhere, and you can make sense out of it. And people are afraid to challenge what someone's saying. And I've told people for years, if you don't challenge what people say to you, you're being foolish. You're giving up your rights to know the truth. You don't even have a life. If you only take what I say and don't work it into your life and find out what the Spirit has to tell you, you know what you do? You don't have a life. You're living my life. God don't need no more of me. He's got all he needs in just me. But he needs you to come to the same place. You see what I'm saying? He wants each one of us to come to the same place, but on our own journey. We share with each other, but you don't believe everything I say just because I say it, do you? You should check it out yourself. Make sure it's real. And you'll find out. If I miss something, I'm sure you'd love me enough. You come tell me. You missed something. We'll look at it and see if I miss it. If I miss it, then I'll be the first one to hug your neck and say, thank you. I missed something. I have no issue with that. I know there's a knot in my string somewhere, whether I know where it's at or not. Everybody's got one. See? Don't worry about it. I can handle it. I'm a big boy. Verse 8, it says, because if Jesus had given them rest, then he would not afterward have spoken concerning another day.
Here says Jesus.
That's what it says.
Who says Joshua?
No. Well, Yeshua is the same name.
Is it?
That's a Hebrew way of saying Jesus. And that's the confusing part of it. Everybody thinks Joshua was not. Yeshua is the Hebrew word for Jesus, Yeshua. And so when they say those words like that, it kind of confuses, but that's the same thing. Just when they spell it J-E-S-U-S, it's, you know, English version. Well, that's those things that I think the Spirit of God puts in there to check us, to say, well, you caught something there. You didn't understand. Don't be afraid to question those things. If something don't make sense in your mind, call it out right then.
Even if it was Joshua, it was the same Spirit.
Yeah, but Joshua was a type of Christ. See, so no big deal. Okay. Verse 9, it goes on and says, there remaineth therefore, or it should say, literally it should say it this way, so there remains a rest to the people of God. Okay. If Jesus had given us rest, then why would he say there's yet a rest to enter into? And that's Paul's argument here. Right? If there wasn't something else, if Jesus had given us the totality of everything that I needed in my life, completed, now he gave me everything I needed to get where I'm going, but he didn't get me there. That's for my journey.
That's because we have to
walk it out
ourselves from this body of death.
That's right. We have to walk it out ourselves. So if there wasn't anything else, if he took us to the totality, if he took us to the teleos, to the end of everything, if he took us there, then why would he say there's something else beyond today?
He that endures to the end.
Yeah, see? So there is something else for us to enter into, and that's his rest, or his abode, his dwelling place, into the realm of the Spirit. Paul said we are seated there, but we haven't stopped working. We still want to do things for God. The only thing I have to do for God is obey him. Right?
This carnal mind
volunteers to do everything.
Oh, yeah.
And in the realm of religion, oh, it feels good about itself. Yeah, I had someone told one time, said, I washed the clothes, the robes for the baptistry in the church. Big Baptist church out in Phoenix. It was an older lady, and she just thought it was she had touched the hem of God when she got in there to do them clothes. I'll leave that alone. Okay, verse 10, correct? It says, because he that entered into his rest or his abode, he also has ceased from his own efforts as God did from his. See that?
I like to amplify that says the weariness and the pain.
Yeah, it is a weariness and the pains between your ears. The word work here is just literally effort. So it says, because he that has entered into God's abodes, what it should say, he has also ceased from his own work. And that's the whole thing. If we can cease from our own labor, from our own thinking about what we should or shouldn't be doing, use that mind of Christ. You know what this book is all about? It's about showing you what God has deposited within your mind already, within your spirit. He said in John 14, 26, I'm going to go away and send you another comforter, and he shall call all things to your whatsoever I have said to you. And there's the action there. There's the said. He said it to us before the foundation. He's trying to reiterate it in your life now. Bring it back to you. See, if we were created in God's image is spirit. Unless I'm sadly mistaken about something, and I don't think I am. We were created in God's image. Now we have the mind of God. Is that not right? But we kind of stumbled a little bit through Adam, didn't we? Did that mean I forgot everything I had?
No.
Did I lose everything I had?
You just covered it up with the flesh.
I covered it up with dust. With that dust thinking. And now God is shaking the dust off. He can have them wind storms come up anytime he wants to, can't he? Blow a little dust away and you say, oh my God, look at there. There you go. And it'll sparkle again. Because it's never lost its luster. It's just been buried in the dirt. That's all it is. And that's what this thing is all about. Each individual making this journey and getting rid of the dust in your life. Because the dust in my life may not be the same dust you've got in your life. We're all different. He made us all unique, just like that diamond with all those facets. And when all those facets get cleaned out, we'll all be one in Him. We're not supposed to be individuals. We're supposed to be a one body. More truth in there than they know. Okay. Verse 11. Let us labor, and it should say that word labor should literally, let us be diligent. Let us be diligent, therefore, to enter into that abode. Let us get back into the Spirit of God. That was Joe. Lest any man fall, not after, but in the same example of obstinance, rebellion, and unbelief. We don't want to fall in the same as what the Old Testament Jews did. Do you realize what the old... I have heard people say this all my life. If I'd been walking back there with them Jews and God did all them miracles, boy, I'd have believed them. They're blowing their own horn. Hey, those people back there were no different than the people where we are today. Are they? They're just people.
If they believed when they see the miracles, but then...
They walked away from it.
It wasn't completed for them, like you said. You got to walk it out.
Yeah, and they couldn't do it. They couldn't make the journey. So, okay, you're in breath. We'll pick you up on the bus. We'll come back and get you later.
In that hindsight.
Yeah. But it wasn't time. It wasn't meant for them to understand yet, or God would have given them the ability. But they still chose not to believe. They wanted to go it the easy way. Okay? Verse 12 says, because they're in unbelief, because the Word of God... That the Logos, that's the spiritual word, the truth of God, is quick, or literally alive, and it's powerful. And that word powerful is actually active or operative. It's functioning. So when you hear this living word of God, it's active and operative, and it's sharper than a two-edged sword, and it pierces or penetrates even to the dividing asunder or the separation of the soul and spirit. Now, those two words, and it's funny because you just asked about that a minute ago, about the soul and the spirit, and the word for soul, they use suke, should be spirit. So those words should be turned around in reality. So when it says the separation of the spirit and the soul, leave it to man to talk about the soul before the spirit, right? That word is suke, and it means spirit. And the other word, pneuma, should say soul, and they put spirit by it. But that's their way of doing it. Soul. And suke is the spirit. I know a lot of people want to say it, but I look at my eyes, tell me something, when I look at that word and see it, the meaning of it in the...
One of the things is the rational soul.
Yep.
It's got one up there, it's got different things.
Yep. Which one are you talking on?
Pneuma.
See, pneuma, it says the rational soul, and that's what it should be.
Yeah.
But see, the pneuma?
Yeah.
Yeah, should be soul, but the church uses that as spirit.
Yeah.
And the suke should be spirit, and it says spirit right in it.
It says both of them right here.
Yeah.
Oh, that's confusing.
Isn't it?
I'm looking at the Strong's.
Yeah.
It says... A spirit, and it says, I e human, the rational soul.
Yeah, can't be.
The same boat thing. Double-minded, so that's telling you the soul.
Double-minded man wrote that one.
So that's telling you the soulish side right there.
Yep.
That's rational.
Yep.
Right.
There's nothing rational about the soul. It's irrational.
Speaking out both sides of its mouth, it's double-minded. That's
yep.
That's
yep. Okay. And it says, and the joints and marrow... And is a discerner, or literally a judge, of the thoughts and the intent. Now that word intent, what would you think that really means?
Intention?
Well, kind of, that's literally the word, the language says the conceptions.
Yeah.
The things we conceive in our mind. Okay? And to me, the word conceptions means a lot more than the word intent. See, because intent just means what I think I'm going to do to me, what I think I'm going to do. But conception tells me it's something that I rationalized in my mind, and this is my thing. I've created it myself. Exactly. Of the mind, not the heart, but of the mind. It's the Greek word cardia, 2588. Okay? But I like the idea to understand that this word is telling me it's something that I brought out of my own mind, my conception, my own creation. Okay? Verse 13, it goes on and says, neither is there any creature that is not manifest or apparent in his sight, but all things are naked and open, or literally exposed, to the eyes of him by which we have to do. Now that words to do is not correct. There's two words there, to do. And you know what they are? The, and well, it should be the, okay. But it should say ho, logos is the two Greek words. The word. So look what it says here. But all things are naked and open or exposed to the eyes of him by which we have the word. How did we have the word? By which? Who did we have the word from? From Jesus, the Christ. The Logos, and he was called the Logos, the word. So, see, they didn't know what to do. They didn't know how to deal with that Logos, and they said they just put it to do.
But wasn't that? That was before the foundation of the world, so it was the Christ.
It was the Christ, yes. Well, Jesus actually brought the word to humanity. Remember, it said through his vessel, the vessel of Jesus. He was the Christ. But, of course, Jesus was the one who brought it to us. I mean, he was given a message, right? In Revelation, he said, you know, the revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave to him to show to his servants things which must shortly come to pass.
So you can still say it.
The Christ.
Your name in it too.
Sure. Yep. When you're part of the Christ, that's part of you. Verse 14. Seeing then that we have a great high priest that has passed into the heavens, what would be a better word for that? The realm of the Spirit, absolutely, the Spirit realm. Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast our what?
Faith in him. Trust, faith in him.
Confession is a much better word than the word. King James says profession. Does anybody have something different in yours?
Confession.
Confession? That's what it really should say.
Mark says profession, but yeah. That's confession.
Yeah, confession is a much better word. See, profession is something you profess. But confession is you're confessing something out of you. It's yours. I don't know, that profession to me sounds like a job. Don't sound right to me. But the confession is something I'm bringing out of me. I'm confessing my truth. Okay. Verse 15. Because we have not a high priest which cannot be touched with the compassion for our infirmities. And he can be touched with the compassion of our infirmities. But was in all points tempted or tested like as we are, yet separate from, not without, but separate from sin. He was separated from the sin. He never sinned in all that he was tested in. He never gave in. And see, Jesus wasn't tempted to eat too much or to tell a lie or anything. He was just tempted to give up in his mind. Wasn't that 40-day temptation out in the desert?
Yeah.
He wasn't tempted by a Big Mac or anything at McDonald's or nothing like that. See, he was tempted between his ears. And we are no different. He said, as he is, so are we in this world. We're tempted right between our ears. That's what the devil and Satan is. It's that temptation, that accusing between our ears every day.
Son of God, you're just a mere man.
That's what they want to say, but you know what? You can be what you want. If you want to believe that you're the dirt bag, then you can be a dirt bag. I'm a son of God. Right?
You're the prodigal.
Yep. Verse 16. Let us therefore approach. The word come there should be approach. Let us approach boldly or with boldness to the throne of grace. Most people have no idea what the throne of grace is. Grace is the divine influence in the heart of a man, a human, and a reflection of that into your lifestyle. So if you come boldly to the throne, what are you doing? You're submitting to it. You're submitting to the authority of that throne. A throne speaks of rulership, doesn't it?
That's like confession you were talking about.
Sure it is. And but you submitting to it freely. No one's making you do anything. We love Him because He first loved us. He's drawn us with love. It's not by tempting us or threatening us with hell or torment or anything else. It's because He loved us. He wants us to take this course. And because we take this course, we're not taking it just for ourselves, but ourselves first. And once we get ourselves straightened out, now we can help anybody else that comes along. See, Jesus didn't change the whole world when He was birthed, did He? He didn't change the world through His life that He lived. He showed examples, but He didn't change anything. He didn't change anything until He was dead, buried, and resurrected. And that sealed the deal. When He was resurrected. That sealed the deal. And that resurrection is the same thing we have to walk in the newness of life, the resurrection of His life. And when we walk in that, the deal's sealed. There ain't nobody can touch it. What was that singer used to sing it? You can't touch this? Huh? MC Hammer, yeah. Yeah. But you can't touch it once it's in there. See? Once you come to this place, it can't be touched. In order that we cross out that word may there, because that's definitely not in there. That in order that we obtain or literally take hold of mercy, which is compassion, and find grace, that's that divine, find that, we take hold of this stuff and obtain this, take hold of this mercy, this compassion, and we'll find grace, that's that divine influence to reflect out of our lifestyle into the world, to help or to aid in the time of need. Is that what it says? Let me give you a better word. Yes, sir. You'll find grace to aid you, and it should say aid you in the time of our opportunity. See? We've always been in the time of need, lacking from God. Is that not true? But it's an opportunity. There's a time of opportunity that comes to us in which we must respond.
That last verse is like what we were speaking of when we realize we've come to a maturity, mm-hmm. to deal with those that have not come to that place.
Yep.
That last verse is the...
Sure it is. Sure it is.
To have the compassion. And only... God don't tell me every day to say something to someone.
No. No. You just got to be listening. It's not like He's got a remote control on you and telling you what to do, just like one of these video games. It's, you know, you just got to be listening and be ready to respond to whatever He says to you.
And rise up.
Huh?
Rise.
Whenever it's time, you do what you got to do. But it's a beautiful thing to see that it's our opportunity. It's nothing like this time of need. And see, that's the mentality of this need thing that the church wants to put on us, like we're poor and helpless. We're not poor and helpless. Are we? This is our opportunity to overcome all the issues of life that's been laid before us. It's an opportunity.
And that, I think for a long time we're like, oh, woe is me, thank you, Jesus.
That's what the church teaches, that need. Like we're lacking something. We're not lacking anything. It says He poured out His Spirit without measure upon His sons. Well, if He poured it out without measure, then how much you got?
All
you need. See, whatever you need, I got it. That's what He said in Exodus 3:14. Moses said, whom shall I tell sent me? To tell him I am. I am that I am. I am. Whatever you need, that's what I am. I'm here. I got it under control.
Tell that stinking thinking.
To lay down.
Yeah, you don't
Hey, we don't have to worry about this stuff. It's okay.
It's like carrying a backpack.
You can lay it down. Lay it down. My job's not to be a mule. I'm not packing anything I don't have to. I'm a servant. And you know what? As a servant, it's not my choice to make decisions. My only decision I make is to say yes to my master.
You know what? What if you're a servant that just serves the good wine?
Good. That's what you're supposed to do. That's what you're called to do. Why would he have you serve bad wine?
You're just serving good wine.
It's good wine. Some people may not like the taste of it, but you know, like the book says in that parable about the old wine and the new wine, the old wine has a taste that you get used to. But when that new wine comes along, it has a different flavor, doesn't it? But it said the old wineskin can't hold the new wine. You got to have that new wineskin, which is the rebirth, to where we can reevaluate and assess and see that this is the life that you give us. Because of all that life effervescing up in that wine, when it's new wine, that bag swells up. And if it's the old stiff one that don't move, it'll pop. And then everything's lost. But put it in a new skin, and everything will be fine.
It's too stubborn and hard-nosed to take it.
That's right. So he said, just let her go. Let the old wine skins hold the old wine. He didn't say go back and try to change their wine. Just let them keep that wine. And you just go ahead and do what you're supposed to do, and everything will be just fine.